Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Brandon, this episode of Raw clearly meant to kind of shore up the major storylines for Backlash, the last episode of Raw for WWE, to get people excited about tuning in on Sunday. Big picture, how'd you come away from this show feeling about the Backlash lineup and if they're getting the most out of that lineup in terms of the hype delivered on this three-hour show?
I thought it was kind of a continuation of the strange booking decision to transition from what was really a hot issue with the tag team unification match into the six-man tag. And I thought that they really went heavy-handed at the start of the show tonight in an attempt to try to make you feel like the six-man tag was as important, if not more important. But I don't really think that they got away with it. I mean, leave it to WWE to the one time in years where they have a tag team title match that actually feels like it means something, that they decided to just completely remove it from the card. I mean, when they were running down the lineup towards the end of the show, I didn't feel like it was a bad card, but it's also not anything that I'm all that excited about. I mean, the three matches that are most intriguing are all WrestleMania rematches. So, I mean, I really liked the Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins match at WrestleMania. So, you know, you hope that they can follow up with a match as good, if not better. I, like you, was a little underwhelmed by Edge and Styles, though I thought it was a good match. So I guess I'm hoping for a better match this time around. And then same kind of goes for Ronda and Charlotte, where I enjoyed the WrestleMania match, but I think they're both capable of more. However, I do think that the I quit stipulation probably hinders them a little bit, because that's typically not my favorite kind of match. So I don't know. It's a mixed bag. I mean, it could be a fine show, but I'm not expecting a ton. I will say on a personal level, I mean, this show is in Providence. So that's about a 4-hour drive for me. And I really was strongly considering going to this show. I literally had a ticket in my card on Ticketmaster like several times when they put it on sale. And I mean, personal reasons aside, I ended up buying a house, and so
Wait, you bought a house with the money you were going to spend on the Backlash?
No.
The house is this. What are you getting?
No, so purchasing furnishings for the house outweighed buying a ticket for WrestleMania Backlash. I opted not to go, but even had I not made the house purchase, I don't think I would have pulled the trigger with this lineup.
Yes, I'm feeling better about your financial decision here. Well, actually, I was feeling pretty good anyway. It depends. If the house was the same price as the Backlash ticket, you either made a really bad call on the retail of you know, you're overpaying, or you're getting a house that I think probably needs a home inspection.
But it could also have just been an incredible deal in this market. I mean, you know.
No, that's not happening. All right, very good. So going back to what you said about the transition from the tag team unification to the six-man, yes, it's an upgrade in quantity and star power to have Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre in a match that they were not previously in. That's a given. But it does feel like we're a little bit of, you know, like Jimmy Smith gaslighting us a little bit, you know, per instructions of his boss, not to blame him, when he makes it seem like it's just obvious that this is a bigger deal. They spent weeks making us think the potential unification, the unification, the inevitable, not potential, the inevitable unification of the tag titles was coming. And it felt huge. It felt like, hey, they merged the men's singles titles at WrestleMania, now the tag titles, what does that mean? And, you know, they had the teaser of a Reigns-Nakamura match, and then they dropped it the next week. And I think it's in that period of time, and I don't have solid reporting on this, but if I just kind of connect dots, they dropped that after the tease. And I think in that time frame, they had, for whatever reason, decided not to go that route. And we're building to this moment. But in between then, they continue to make it seem like this really big deal that the belts would be unified. I put up a Twitter poll a few hours ago during Raw. I was curious what people thought of that decision. And I said, what's a bigger WWE Backlash main event? RK-Bro and Usos unified the tag belts or the six-man with Drew and Reigns being added? 84% voted that the unification match without Reigns and McIntyre, a bigger deal. So, you know, for whatever that's worth, 165 votes at this point, nothing, not a huge sample size, but significant enough. Among those who follow PW Torch on Twitter, you know, they think that Jimmy Smith was saying something that wasn't true, which is, this is obviously an upgrade. So I don't know what that means for the Backlash viewership level. I'm trying to figure out what, I was going to say buy rate, but that's old school, dated, but I don't know what it means for that, but I think it is a downgrade on the show. I think people would rather see, frankly, Reigns against Nakamura if they had developed that storyline and the unification of the tag titles. That said, I'm against unification of the tag titles, so in the macro aggregate, I'm happy they're doing this, but I just think it's a little slick of them to do this the way that they did.
But wait, you're missing what could end up happening is that not only do they give us a six-man tag team match now, but then they still unify the titles down the road, like
well,
maybe at a bigger show like Money in the Bank. I definitely think that they could have, on a show like this, gotten away with having that tag team title match close the show. I mean, they've got enough elsewhere. They've got the big women's title match. They've got the Cody and Rollins rematch. They have the Edge and Styles match. I think that they had put enough into this tag team title match to make it work. And if you add in Reigns versus Nakamura as sort of a mid-card B-level title defense, I mean, even, heck, open the show with it. You know, put Reigns in a prominent position there and open the show with it. And then you can leave McIntyre off the card, but bring him out at the conclusion of the match and say, hey, he's the next challenger. Even if he just points the sword at Reigns, I mean, you've got your match set up, and then you're off to the races.
Yeah, I am curious if Vince thought the match is too big for Backlash, we need to save it, or I don't want to unify the belts, and I don't like the finishes that we've come up with, or if for a while they weren't sure if Reigns would be able to go, and once he was, they felt like, well, we can't build up a singles match, but we want him on the show. And maybe Peacock threw a fuss. I mean, there's all kinds of things. Like I said, I don't have solid reporting on this at this point.
Right.
And I haven't seen anything out there. It doesn't mean somebody hasn't come up with something. But I'm curious if I'm able to ask around or others are, if they come up with a little bit of a timeline and a rationale for this. Because it could be any number of those things. I mean, Reigns has been going long with Drew McIntyre at house shows. Jason Powell and I, should run a correction, got asked that question. And I was a couple weeks behind on my analysis saying, you know, I didn't know if Reigns was healthy enough. But I had seen reports and just forgot that, you know, they were doing these house show matches. We actually got some reports from people who attended. By the way, keep sending reports if you go to a house show, WWE house show. I know they're doing them. We got some reports from overseas this weekend. We'll be getting posted on the site. You can send it to kellerwade@gmail.com if you want to help us out in that regard. So Reigns has been healthy, and certainly if he's having long singles matches with Drew, he doesn't need to be, quote, protected in a six-man. So, yeah, it's an intriguing situation and a road traveled by WWE that I think has not led to a crescendo or peak interest in this show as far as the main event goes. We'll talk more about the undercard as we go. Some things better than others in terms of the hype and the undercard, but we'll delve into that as we continue the show here and bring callers and emails into the show. Speaking of which, let's pause and introduce the show and introduce ourselves. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, May 2nd, 2022. I am Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, a paper copy weekly publication that I started when I was in high school decades ago. And we've traveled along with technology through various formats, including launching our website in 1999 and now, of course, podcasting and several other stops along the way in different mediums. And we're glad that you joined us here on our post-show podcast. This is our red logo show. If you're not subscribing yet, you're just streaming our show, thank you. But go ahead and subscribe. Search Wade Keller on just about any podcast app, and subscribe for free. You'll see a red logo and a blue logo pop up with my face and name on it. This is the Red Logo Show, our live post shows that can be downloaded on demand afterwards. And then our Blue Logo Show is our main podcast, including our weekly flagship, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. He'll be joining me tomorrow for a Tuesday flagship, and we'll have more content as the week goes on. We also do cool flashbacks from 5 and 10 years ago throughout the week to either relive some of our shows and hot topics of the past or see what we're saying about wrestling back when you weren't listening to our podcast or maybe you weren't even watching wrestling yet. So lots of reasons to search Wade Keller and subscribe to both the Red Logo and Blue Logo Show. And while you're at it, our PW Torch Daily Cast feed is also free. Just search PW Torch, and you get a different show each day of the week covering a different specific topic. Great hosts, great chemistry, real variety. There's going to be somewhere between 1 and 7 shows on that lineup you really look forward to each week. So subscribe to that for free also. But back to business tonight, we're talking Raw, and the other voice you hear so far is Brandon LeClair. He is a contributor to PWTorch.com. He covers WWE and AEW pay-per-views alongside my reports. His reports appear, and that includes this Sunday during WWE WrestleMania Backlash, which we will refer to going forward as Backlash. Brandon, welcome to the co-host chair.
Thanks for having me. I am vehemently opposed, though. I will refer to the show exclusively as WrestleMania Backlash. I'm just kidding.
I have a lot of editing to do later.
I'm angry enough that Edge and Priest Stable is called Judgment Day because it's like that's a pay-per-view, not a tag team.
I know.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, good to be back with you. It's been a while since we did a post-show.
I just realized that it has been quite some time. The last time I was on was with Zach, so it's been almost 2 months.
Yeah, well, it's always great to be on a show with you, and glad you're here to analyze the final hype on Raw, that is, for Backlash. At the beginning of the show, they did the angle with Roman Reigns and Drew and the Usos and RK-Bro, and we'll talk about that in detail a little bit later as the show goes on. I wasn't a fan of afterwards, Byron Saxton excitedly saying, if you thought it was crazy tonight, they're all going to be on SmackDown on Friday. I get that. I mean, I get, you know, SmackDown is the final show before the pay-per-view, and it is coming up later in the week, and it makes sense to hype your show. But given that Reigns showed up the day after WrestleMania and said a few words, but said, for the real big news, tune in Friday, and then he didn't show up at all since then. And then he shows up, and Byron Saxton's like, huh, if you think tonight was something, wait till Friday. It's like you don't want to underline or emphasize or just plant the notion in fans' minds that Raw is sort of the setup or the pre-show for SmackDown. Not a huge deal, you know, but I sort of tilted my head like it should. There might be a better way to frame it than if you thought tonight was wild, wait till Friday. I wish they had something a little more specific and something that didn't feel like it sort of defined down what happened on Raw.
Yeah, it's one of the unintended consequences, I think, of merging those two world titles. I mean, you put yourself in a situation where I think they want to get Reigns on both shows, but they don't want to give away too much, and they also sort of want to keep Fox happy by making sure that the bulk of Reigns' involvement in weekly TV is still rooted on Friday nights, where he's an official member of the roster. So I think it's one of those kind of inadvertent corners that they've backed themselves into with the merging of the titles. And I honestly thought that we'd already be seeing a split. So I'm sort of, I don't want to say necessarily, I don't want to say impressed is the right word, but I'm a little surprised that they have had the patience already.
That is really saying something, isn't it?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yes, yes. Cool. Did I give out the phone numbers? 347-215-8558. I feel like I left some things. I'm good at this. I've done this a lot. I should be good at it, but I think I left out the phone number. So 347-215-8558. We'd love to hear from you and what you thought of the final hype for Backlash on Raw, that is, and just any thoughts on the show. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. At any time after you call in, that'll flag you on our switchboard, so that means we know that you're like raising your hand. Pick me. I want to be on the show. So we invite you to do so. 347-215-8558. This Sunday night, Greg Parks will be hosting the live post-show And that will be available for download on the PW Torch Dailycast feed. So search PW Torch to be sure that you have access to that on demand. You can listen live. There will be a link in my pay-per-view report on Sunday night to Greg Park's post-show that will go live shortly after Backlash ends. You can also email us tonight, right now, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you're listening to us on delay, on demand, and you weren't a part of the live stream, but you have a question about Raw or anything else that you want to submit for the flagship that Greg Parks and I will be recording tomorrow, you can use that email too, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, well, let's start rolling through calls, and we'll certainly cover a lot more subjects. We are going to go to Kyle first. We've got some regulars on hold. Nick, you are second, so hold tight. Kyle, I do want to bring you on because the women were a big part of this show. We had a 24/7 action. We had a 6-woman main event and more. So I figured there's a lot to choose from, and you might get us into a discussion on the women's match in particular. So Kyle from Baltimore, welcome.
Hey, thanks. It was a good match, but I was really was going to talk about really was this backlash on Sunday itself, because I was thinking to myself watching Raw in general as a whole was that what it is, I was, because before the word they said it was going to be Sonya and Bianca at Backlash, and he changed his mind to do it last week, and now Bianca's not even on the show, which is fine, I guess, but because they already have, you know, Charlotte and Ronda for the I Quit match. But it's like, this is their big thing, having them in the main event as a prize of not saying you're not going to be on the pay-per-view. None of you are, so just be on the main event, which is fine. But I find that bizarre that they're not going to be in at the pay-per-view itself. At least Bianca isn't. So I guess my question is then is that what are they going to be doing with evolving the 6-man tag which was really bizarre to me that Roman Reigns isn't even defending the title. I guess why is that even a thing when there's nothing on the line? Why should I care about it? Because I already don't. I just find that so weird to me. All of that with the women closing the show, which is fine, but yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah. Brandon, I mean, we can grab on a couple things Kyle brought up there for discussion, but the last thing you brought up is just why should people care about the 6-man tag match? And that is a problem, because I think Drew against Reigns should feel like a big deal in any context, given how long they've been apart. And the Usos and RK-Bro, I think, are a hot act. That should be a match people look forward to. And it feels like a bigger deal than just something you would have on an average episode of Raw or SmackDown. But when you take away the high stakes of unifying the tag titles, you've suddenly, you know, given people something that they should be excited about, but are now comparing it to what was taken away, and they feel less good about it. I think that is a problem. Could they have done something on tonight's show to add a sense of importance or what's at stake besides wait till these three battle these three as sort of the beginning, middle, and end of the framing of why this match is something that to look forward to and anticipate?
Yeah, I don't know that there is anything that I can come up with off the top of my head in terms of making what they did tonight any better, because I don't know that the solution is there to make this match feel bigger. I think, you know, you could go the route of putting a stipulation on it in the sense that, you know, if Drew's team gets the win, he gets a title shot against Roman, but like that's not that big of a deal. And I take what you mentioned about that it does feel a little bit bigger than something that they'd have on Raw or SmackDown. And I do agree, but really the only reason I feel that way is because they've been so protective of having Roman Reigns wrestle on TV. If right. This were, you know, 5 or 10 years ago and you had a 6-man tag team main event of a pay-per-view featuring your main event stars not named, say, Brock Lesnar, I don't think it would pass at all. I mean, John Cena, Randy Orton, those guys were wrestling on TV every week in tag team matches, six-man tag team matches. So it wouldn't have worked then. I think they can get away with it a bit more now because of the Roman Reigns factor. But like you mentioned earlier, too, we don't know. I guess if he's working long matches with Drew on house shows, I guess we know he's healthy. I was going to say we don't know how much involvement he'll have in the match itself. But I still just don't think that there's anything in particular that you can do to make this feel more important than it does, which is to say that it just doesn't. It feels like a match. Big names, but a match that means ultimately very little.
Yeah. How about the women's situation? The Backlash lineup has Charlotte against Ronda Rousey announced. And so they have all this stuff going on with the Raw women, with Becky and Asuka, and then Sonya in her storyline of using her authority. And you've got the Liv Rhea Ripley situation. And they close Raw with it. Does that make the main event feel more special, or does it make Backlash feel less special?
I think that getting the six women from Raw on the show tonight, it's an opportunity to let them breathe a little bit and give them some time. Whereas maybe if they threw a match like that on Sunday, it would probably feel a little rushed with the rest of the card. It seems like a lot of the matches on Sunday's card are going to be relatively long, and that's likely why they're keeping it on the shorter end in terms of the number of matches. So if you don't have a big title match planned, I don't mind relegating them to the main event of the go-home show. I think, in fact, we've talked about that before, where you can kind of cut down on your pay-per-view cards by taking a couple of those matches that don't necessarily need to be on pay-per-view and giving them room to breathe in the main event of your go-home show. And you would hope that that would help get people excited to see, you know, the rest of the roster. I don't know if it worked tonight, because I don't know that people are all that excited about this card in general. And there isn't a ton of direction in the Raw women's division, so there isn't a ton to look forward to from there right now. So it's hard to say that this match in particular did anything to really hype people up about the weekend. But I do think that the idea is a novel one, and one that they should continue with in general.
Kyle, back to you. I don't know if we hit everything you wanted us to, or if you want to add a different topic, but go ahead.
I guess another thing too is that, you know, Becky just came back. They just turned Rhea. They brought back Asuka. So I guess they have to probably wait until Money in the Bank or Hell in a Cell for next month, probably. So probably that's why they did what they did, I guess. But I think going to Rhodes and Rollins, I think that's a fine build, I guess. I've been one of the people who've been that high on Cody Rhodes, because this is, I guess, personal preference. I'm not a Rhodes fan. I don't hate him, but I don't care that much about him. But I can see why people like him, because he's been popular. He's getting all these reactions, which is fine, I guess. That's kind of surprising still to me. Even still, I probably will never get over that. And so the build has been fine. I just worry about Seth Rollins, because I mentioned before, if he keeps on losing these big time matches, and what is the direction for Seth Rollins if he ends up losing was next to Seth Rollins after this? Because I'm not sure how he's going to be seen as a top star if he keeps losing the Cody Rhodes 2 pay-per-views in a row.
Brandon, talk about your thoughts on Seth and Cody tonight in particular, but also just catch us up on what you think of what they've done with them so far.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a precarious position to have the Rollins and Rhodes feud continue. I think that they work well together, and it makes sense from a wrestling perspective to continue this story. But I do think, like Hal mentioned, that you run the risk of sort of further damaging Seth Rollins' position as a main event act. And to be honest, I have a bit of trouble taking him seriously as a main event act right now, just because I don't think that character is befitting of a main event wrestler. I err closer to Todd Martin's opinion on this, in that it's just really hard to take Seth Rollins seriously. And I'm a big Seth Rollins fan, so it kind of it sucks a little to say that, but I just don't think that his character works from a main event perspective. So in that regard, I don't think that it's a big deal for him to lose to Cody again, but as someone who's generally rooting for Seth Rollins, I would prefer that he were in a position where, you know, it made more sense for him as a main event character to be going over Cody in this situation. I think that, again, this is probably a match that Rhodes wins. I think he probably needs to win to continue on the trajectory that he is he's on right now, unless they want to go with a three-match situation. But even then, I just don't know that with how you've handled Cody thus far that you want to saddle him with a loss quite yet, especially to this Rollins character. So as far as how Cody's been handled, I think that, you know, the initial debut was really, really strong. He was presented as a major star right out of the gate. I felt a little less enthused as the weeks have passed. It almost feels like he loses a little bit of shine every single week. And part of that is just because, you know, it's not new anymore. We're kind of getting used to seeing Cody back on WWE TV. So that's going to happen naturally. But I think that the crowd reactions have tapered off a bit, and that's probably contributing to my belief that, you know, maybe he's not connecting at quite the level that they had initially hoped. But I still think that he's coming off, by and large, as a star and someone who they need to push, for sure. So I'm interested to see what happens once he's out of this Rollins feud. I think that, you know, it's been good for him overall, and I think that they'll have another good match on Sunday. But I do want to see what happens next and how quickly they transition him to Roman Reigns. Because you figure if Drew McIntyre is next for Roman, then that's going to leave some time for Cody to work with someone else, and I'm just not sure who's on that list.
I feel that way about a lot of wrestlers, and I know that's one of Kyle's main questions. They just don't have a lot of options in terms of reshuffling things. And I don't know if Vince just shows up like the day after the pay-per-view and yells at the writing team for not having done a good enough job giving him something to work with for the next pay-per-view, or if there's like long-term planning and it just takes one wrestler and to you know, one new opponent for each of these big wrestlers, and he's got that in the back of his mind and it'll just sort of make sense when it happens, but they have to tell that story first. But no, it's not like it jumps out. You know, these rosters are thin by design, and until the superstar shakeup, until the next draft, it's going to feel like a challenge. But even then, after the draft, it's going to be like, oh, well, there's this guy and that guy and that guy for him. You know, we're gonna plot out a whole year and wonder how they're going to get through it. That's just, you know, WWE is making more money than ever, and they pay their wrestlers who are on the roster well, and in some cases really well and better than ever, I'm hearing. But they don't have a deep roster, and I question the wisdom of that, of not just going, working hard to spend some money. And I'm not saying cut Seth's pay and Drew's pay and Roman's pay to do it. There's enough money to go around, but I mean, maybe work a little harder to go, you know, three more wrestlers or four more wrestlers deep on your roster where you have an upper mid card where you can get somebody revved up on the back burner so that we're not having this conversation continually, Kyle, about what can be next. And yeah, I mean, as far as Cody goes, I felt this wasn't a red hot week for him. I'm looking at the crowd when he comes out, and yes, they zoom in on a fan who's rocking out to Cody's horrible entrance theme. I don't like it. I don't like that style of music, but I haven't never liked it, but that's personal taste. The music is, but they found like one fan, and then, you know, I think they caught someone else looking at that guy like, seriously, this isn't Jericho song. What are you doing? But I don't see a lot of people, like big clusters of people where the majority, even close to the majority, are showing enthusiasm for him. Now, we see these Cody chants, but I don't trust that they're not piped in and then just people sort of join in. I'm not seeing this organic pop for Cody the way that we did in AEW. And if that's going on, Cody went through trauma in AEW with the fans turning on him. If now there's a sense of indifference towards him and it's just piped in chants that's sort of propping up the mirage that he's over, that's going to get in Cody's head and could throw off his confidence a little. Although, with what Cody's getting paid and the aforementioned lack of roster depth, he'll be fine. You know, I mean, let the machine, you know, create that mirage, go through the motions, do your work. But I don't think it's a type of chapter of his career that's going to make him, like, you know, just prideful. You know, that things are going so well, it'll sort of be like, well, I'm a veteran body dropped in the machine, and, you know, they scooped me onto the plate of the format sheet, and I'm doing my job and then going home to my baby. And I mean, that's not a bad life, but it's very different than where he was, you know, 3-4 years ago, out to change the industry. I'm not sensing crowd enthusiasm or pops, and I'm not seeing it with my eyes either. So I too, Brandon, I'm a little worried, but I think we just have to see what happens next. And is part of it Seth? I think Seth actually has been fine as a first opponent for Cody, more than fine. You know, with the way the story was told and Seth going, I didn't know, I wasn't prepared for you, and now I'm going to be prepared for you, and the storyline of Dusty and Seth kind of, you know, saying maybe some, I don't want to say semi-shoot comments, but certainly there's an element where people might wonder if it rings true when he says, you're like your dad, you're self-centered, whatever, you know, the insults were that were thrown at Dusty in the late 80s. And when he was a booker and not popular among hardcore fans or a lot of his peers. And if they're sort of thinking, well, let's throw some stuff out there that feels true. But then Cody's got to come back strong in response to that. And I think Cody comes across as a star, but I'm still not sure of a suit wearing mid 30s guy with a weird tattoo on his neck trying to fulfill his father's dream. I don't know if that's ultimately going to be enough for him to be a difference maker for WWE or, dare I say, needle mover. Brandon, go ahead.
I think one of my biggest hangups with Cody right now is the way that I thought his initial – so when he showed up at WrestleMania and they gave him just this massive entrance with the multiple pyro displays, mm-hmm. and all that, it made sense. It was a big debut. It was his first night back in the company, and it was WrestleMania. But they've been treating every entrance he's had since WrestleMania like it's WrestleMania, and that can backfire on them. Mm-hmm. Because yep. If Cody is not holding up his end of the bargain as being this big megastar, and it may not even be his fault, Cody is a star. But they are setting him up to be something bigger than he is with an entrance that big every night.
Yeah.
And I think that it's going to come back to bite him, because even when he's on the show more than once, I mean, there's been several weeks here since WrestleMania where Cody has appeared on the show in two segments, where he's come to the ring in two separate segments, and they reload the pyro for the second entrance. Yep. I mean, that is a little too much. No one gets that treatment. I mean, Roman Reigns doesn't even get that treatment because Roman doesn't come out more than once.
No, I think between the tattoo and the suits, and I do think people who aren't familiar with Cody are like, well, what's with the hair, dude? And then you have the over-the-top grandiose entrance. There's a lot about Cody, even without Brandy as part of the picture, that could lead to WWE fans who I think are more willing to buy what's for sale than AEW fans. Well, I don't know. AEW fans are pretty willing to buy what's for sale too. And you know, for better or for worse, I'm not casting judgment. I just, they both of their fan bases, I think, are treating their pro wrestling promotion of choice more like fans of a local sports team are. And that's different than 5 years ago. You know, listen to our post shows 5 and 10 years ago when it was largely a one company industry. Yes, you had some New Japan fans, and there's Impact fans who are famous for how, you know, passionate they are about, in small numbers, but, you know, they'll show up if you insult them. And ROH fans have had their moments, and PWG and all that, but it was small scale compared to AEW. So a lot of wrestling discussion among hardcore fans 5 and 10 years ago was, how do we fix WWE? And now it's sort of like, I don't care about WWE. I don't need to fix it. I got AEW. Vice versa. Now the WWE fans who are left are like, we like this. It's different than AEW. AEW is not for me, and they're more willing to accept it and not, you know, even feel the need to defend themselves against the fans who are protesting it, the bellwether fans or whatever, because they're not even going to the shows anymore. So you have this weird dynamic set up now where Cody should be accepted by WWE fans, who I think are willing to embrace him. And it sort of feels like if it doesn't happen, I mean, it's on him and Vince McMahon for not making it happen, because I think, and that might be through editing his entrance, like you bring up, and some other things. But I do think Cody is talented enough. He'll get through it, and Vince and Cody will figure it out. And I think they have a more palatable canvas to create a painting that fans will cheer, even if they have to adjust some things along the way, than how things just unraveled beyond repair in AEW, where it was heel turn or nothing.
Yeah, there's so many levels to the Cody Rhodes fandom within WWE, because you kind of pointed out the separate groups. You have the strictly WWE fans who are catching Cody for the first time in many years since he left, and some of them may be really into the act and think, wow, you know, this guy came back and reinvented himself and he's a big deal and I buy it. And others may be like, hey, this guy was Stardust the last time I saw him. Why is he such a big deal? And then for the extreme WWE loyalist, the ones who, you know, reside on Twitter and solely exist to sort of poke holes in the theory that AEW is viable competition or even a viable promotion, Cody Rhodes is a hero because he represents the first beacon of their idea of the ship sinking over in AEW. So there's all these different groups that sort of encompass what may or may not be Cody Rhodes fandom or Cody Rhodes disdain. And I think the water is a little muddy right now, and it's going to be a little while before there is sort of a consensus opinion.
All right, Kyle, thanks for holding throughout all that. Is there anything else you want to bring up or any follow-up?
So for me, I'm a WWE fandom for life, and I've been – and when I saw Cody Rhodes, he was in that legacy thing with Randy Orton. He didn't mean anything. Then the whole Stardust thing, that didn't mean anything. So when he came back, I was like, I didn't see what made him such a big deal. All of a sudden, he's a big-time star. Like, it's like a whole – I just didn't see it. And then with him, if he's going to go after Roman Reigns, I just can't see it. So it's so unrealistic to me that he's going to like defeat Roman Reigns for the championships. Like, really? I don't see it. And I still don't see it. The final thing is about Roman Reigns is that they're going to have to take one of those titles off of him quickly, because the longer they keep it on him for another month, they need to not do that, because if it's going to be like this, it's going to be a very boring, boring title reign like it has been for the last few weeks. But I'll leave you with that. Thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it. Brandon, anything else you want to add to that? It's interesting having Kyle, a diehard WWE loyalist, going, I'm not seeing it with Cody.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is going to be those groups of people. I mean, it certainly makes sense. If you haven't seen what he's done outside of WWE, I think that based on what you've seen thus far, it would be pretty easy to conclude that this is sort of WWE propping the guy up. And that's not my personal belief. I do, like you, think that Cody is very talented and is deserving of this spot for the most part, ultimately. But I do think that the way that they've presented him thus far with the elaborate entrance, like I talked about, I can certainly understand why someone who only watches WWE could arrive at that conclusion. I think back to my own opinions on different wrestlers over the years. I look at someone like Bobby Lashley, who I didn't really follow Lashley's sort of resurgence in Impact. And so when he returned to WWE, he was more or less the same guy to me. I really didn't see much of a difference. And I held that opinion for quite some time, but I think eventually I came around to the idea once he was teamed up with MVP, I think his career changed dramatically. So I definitely see where people could have that opinion, and it's certainly valid right now.
Yep. All right. Very good. Our number, if you are joining us midstream here, is 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. We're going to next, as promised, to Nick in Brattleboro and then William in San Diego. You are on deck. Nick, thanks for holding through our long call with Kyle. Our conversation sparked by Kyle.
Interesting as always. It was good to talk to you, Brandon. How you doing?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
And just because of who I am, I have to check on the doggy. How's he doing?
He's good. He's good. Yeah, he's having a good week.
Okay. WWE and Raw and SmackDown have been a challenge to me, which is why I haven't called lately. But there was a couple things tonight that spurred me to want to get on the phone with you guys. The first is, and I'll pick up Kyle's women's division flag here, and I was really hoping that after, you know, Becky lost her title and she came back, that they would begin to transition her back to where she should be, which is this, you know, extremely popular, edgy babyface. And you even watch her when she gets in the ring, she still does the thing where she gets up on the ring ropes and you know, faces the crowd. And I just think it's her, you know, whatever energy she had before, I think is just, they're just throwing buckets of water on her. And I know she, you know, maybe this is what she wants to do, and, you know, she wanted to help live out, and but it's time to bring her back and let the fans throw adoration at her, because I think that's what they really want to do.
Brandon, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I sort of gave up pounding the table for turning Becky back babyface, because I think that they're sort of planting their feet, and yeah, I'm not sure if this is something that Becky is insisting on, and I don't know, but I do think that if she is, that I wish she would reconsider, because I do think that she's more valuable to the company as a babyface. I think that they need her as a babyface. I think that she can coexist with other babyfaces on the roster, especially with a move to SmackDown. And I just think that when you have someone who is that important to the division, it's hard. It's hard to slot them in another role. I look at Becky Lynch in the same way that I think WWE viewed John Cena for all those years, in that, you know, they thought that his star power was too big to warrant the creative freedom in turning him heel, the creative freedom they'd gain in turning him heel. I look at Becky in much the same way, and that's not to say that Becky is as big of a draw as Cena is, but she is to the women's division what Cena was to the men's division at the time. And I think that her star power at this stage is just too important to have her trapped in that heel role. And I do hope that eventually they come around on that. I think that, you know, if Ronda sticks around, I don't know how I don't get a sense that Ronda as a babyface is working nearly as well as maybe she hopes and as they hoped it would. And I think maybe, you know, the ultimate goal is to get back to that match, the one-on-one match between Becky and Ronda Rousey. And if they do get back to that, presumably at next year's WrestleMania, man, I really think Becky needs to be the babyface there. So, you know, maybe this is part of a journey, getting back there, but they seem pretty committed to it for right now.
And I would say, however you feel about Becky's turn, she's bringing it. You know, like, I mean, her new looks, her ring gear, her emotional investment in what she's doing, the sense of, I'm going to see something fresh this week, which you don't always get with Charlotte in terms of her character. And I'm not saying Charlotte should be, like, going through the emotional roller coaster that Becky is, because their characters are different, and Charlotte's certainly bringing it in terms of her outfits, her presentation is major league. But with Becky, it's sort of like, What are we going to get this week from her? Is she going to be cocky and self-confident? Is she going to be despondent and breaking down? Is she going to be, you know, so is she going to look ready to crack or ready to shine? And so I'm interested in what she's doing. And I just think it's a consolation prize for people who just wanted her to cheer or think just business-wise it would have been best to just make her this lead babyface, and that would have been a spark for business. At least she doesn't seem like she's not trying. And at least I think, unlike Edge, it doesn't feel like she's cosplaying a heel that we don't believe. Like, I think I can watch Becky and lose myself in her performance and believe her character snap, because there is a real story to her snapping and kind of going in a new place, where with Edge, it's just, you thought you knew me, well, you never did. Oh, so that all that stuff about your kid and your wife, and we're going to believe that wasn't really you, and you were just faking it, and you really just were putting on this act to feud with Miz. Like, it just, the continuum doesn't make any sense. With Becky, she was gone, she came back, and she has this core story that works well enough, I think, when matched with her performances to, you know, allow people to buy it.
Yeah, I'm completely with you there. I think that while Becky would be better served as a babyface, and her better work overall comes as a babyface, and her better, you know, importance to the business and her drawing power comes with her as a babyface, I think that she is all in on this character, and it is still very entertaining, even if I don't think it is the best thing for her. Whereas Edge, like you mentioned, I've got a lot to say about that Edge character. Oh man.
Yeah.
No comment.
All right, Nick. Nick, back to you.
The other thing, I just wanted to get both of your guys' opinions on the crowd sweetening, if you will. It seemed to me that Drew was dead, you know, very cold. I think they've got a lot of work to do to get him back to where he was when he and Roman faced off. They had that great table segment way back when in the era that shall not be named. But, you know, it just, like you, I look at the audience and he seems cold. And it was weird that they started off the show with this six-man thing, and then it was like, except for the talking about it as a promoting it, there was nothing else. I mean, they had this huge fight, and then there was like no backstage segment, no nothing. And so I just was wondering what you thought about using the crowd sweetening to try and get Drew over when he's pretty cold.
Brandon, I don't think it's in dispute that Drew isn't a red hot babyface character right now. But is what Nick is accurately describing a result of what he's been doing? You know, Sammy and Corbin, and it's just, you know, let him be against somebody who's a big deal and Drew will rise to the occasion and fans will get reinvested. Is that enough, or was this a bad sign this week? Did you pick up on what Nick is pointing out?
Yeah, I think that they've got some work to do to get Drew back to a place where he feels like a legitimate contender for Roman. I mean, for a long time, we talked about that as a potential WrestleMania main event, and it certainly doesn't feel that way right now. And I think that is largely because of what they've saddled Drew with over the last year or so. I mean, Drew is Drew. He's you know, an incredible athlete. He's got the look. He can go in the ring. He seems to have, you know, a genuine connection with the fans, but he's lost some of that just by being involved in lowbrow mid-card comedy stuff. And I don't think the sword helps. I think it was a novelty act and a cool gimmick for the feud with Sheamus back when they introduced it, but it should have been nipped at the end of that. I mean, that's where it should have been introduced and taken out of the equation. I just think it's run its course. I don't think anybody buys that when he swings the thing, he's ever going to connect, because he's not going to commit murder on television, especially as a babyface. It's not believable. And I don't think it helps people take him as a serious main eventer. So I think he's got to lose the sword, and I think they have to really distance themselves from where he's been for the last several months, because feuding with Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss and going 50-50 with those guys in match after match, even if he ended up winning them all, it's just not a good look. It doesn't scream main eventer. And I'm a huge proponent of Drew McIntyre being a staple main event babyface for them. I think they need him to be strong right now. So, yeah, I like that they're getting him back into a serious situation. But it did feel quick. It felt rushed. It felt like there was really no reason to have him come out there and come to Randy Orton and Riddle's aid last week. On the one hand, I don't want to say that too loudly, because it's like, I do like the idea that a babyface is defending other babyfaces. But it wasn't his fight. I mean, he hasn't had anything with the Usos or with Roman Reigns for quite some time. So it did feel a little bit shoehorned to kind of get him into the match.
Right.
But I do think that getting him involved with serious main event players is ultimately a step in the right direction.
Nick, back to you.
Yeah, no, last thing, Mustafa Ali, I'm really happy to see him on television, and I love the potential for him to have a real bang-up series of matches with, and I'm going to use the full name, Tommaso Ciampa. But why they had him get verbally buried, calling him Must, I mean, just the crassness of Miz and Austin Theory. Now, granted, they're heels and they're supposed to do that, but it was almost like it was Vince was out there reminding Mustafa Ali that he's on a razor's edge and watch his butt. And I would have much rather not have the Miz segment and just have the confrontation with Ciampa, and let's get going with that, and give him a real chance to shine. Have him, both of them, a real chance to shine. And I felt it was very crass what they did to him tonight.
Brandon, your thoughts on Mustafa Ali's push, and was tonight crass? Was it heels being heels? What do you think?
Well, Vince McMahon has had the tendency to speak through the Miz before, and yeah, we know that he literally speaks through Austin Theory because, I mean, it's an on-screen. Yeah, I mean, that's literally the gimmick. So, it felt like a bit of a message to Ali, and I don't know if that's something that's going to continue. I think I'm in sort of wait-and-see mode because – I mean, if this leads to a sustained push for Ali, then, you know, who cares? You know, it's sort of heels being heels. But ultimately, if they're using Ali and they're using him to his full potential, then it's okay if they you know, want to poke fun or kind of, you know, send the dog whistle about his backstage drama or public Twitter drama on TV if it leads to him being utilized and, you know, in a position of prominence. But if this is sort of step one of ultimately a burial, then yeah, I mean, it comes off as unnecessary. I think my biggest thing with Ali coming out of these last couple of weeks is just, I wish they'd have put him on SmackDown. I mean, man, SmackDown really needs babyfaces right now.
Yeah. I didn't have a problem. I didn't have a big problem consistently throughout the Mustafa Ali segment with what Miz and Theory were doing, other than I get, you know, I have a short leash for, like, meta stuff. You know, so much of Cody's act in AEW is meta stuff. And with Ali, there was, you know, meta. Oh, you know, if anybody knows about Heat, it's me. And with that kind of knowing, you know, he didn't wink, but sort of the facial expression was a wink to the audience. And I mean, how many people watching Raw have any clue what that's about? And the people who do might be looking at other things being said in the segment like Nick did and think, well, this just feels like it's going places that feels petty or vengeful or you know, whatever. So to me, for Ali to say, hey, I went to the fans and Miz, you go backstage and talk to management, it felt like they were going for a little bit of that Raw talk or talking smack, whichever it was, segments with Miz and Daniel Bryan years ago, where you're like, ooh, you know, is this getting, you know, more heated than it should? Or, man, this is, you know, I'm hearing stuff I don't normally hear. But it never felt like it was getting into shoot territory. It more felt kind of like just flexing their meta muscles. Look, what we're doing on Raw, this is going to generate some buzz on social media. All that said, what I took from it is Mustafa Ali is cast correctly. Hopefully they got this out of their system. His character is – they're going to imply – that he has agency, that he's an individual, that he isn't just a company guy. He could back that up by not using the term title opportunity, you know, so articulately and studiously. So there's some of that. Like, it would be nice if we could loosen up some of the language, not in a way that feels like, you know, oh, a pipe bomb promo. I'm saying the word wrestling. Vince McMahon, what do you think? You know, like, don't be that, you know, just patronizing and over the top about it, because I think we're past that. But a little, some, just some subtlety where it's like, okay, he's not just towing the line and studying the talking points backstage to make sure he says things correctly. That would go a long way if that's what they're going for with his act. But all of that said, he's cast correctly. I really like, I think he's very likable. I think he has a chance to be sort of, you know, WWE's current kind of Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan, or, you know, the new version of that, a wrestler that fans who like AEW a little better, but, oh, Ricochet's getting a push. I kind of have to admit, I like RK-Bro and what they're doing. I do like Becky. I like Bianca. You give them a little bit extra in Ali getting a push, and we could probably name two or three other things. If you kind of put that in there, I think it can be a difference maker where people are more willing to plug their nose or you know, white knuckle their way through the next Happy Corbin segment, as long as a really good worker like Ali is not being a cartoon character and speaking his mind. So overall, I'm good with what they're doing with him. Brandon, do you want to reply to any of that, or should we just throw it at Nick?
You can throw it to Nick. I definitely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
I'll
just end with this. First of all, good to talk to you guys again. It's always a pleasure. Also, I wanted to shill a little bit for the YouTube, the PW Torch YouTube channel. I've been watching some of them. They're really good. So I would urge everybody to go to YouTube and watch the Fireside Chats. And then on Ali and Ciampa, it's almost I could see a Johnny Wrestling Tommaso Ciampa redux, you know, just that, you know, a couple of really great workers just going at it and having a great series of matches.
Yeah, Ciampa's another one I could add to the list of, oh, Ciampa's getting a push. I might give Raw another try. And, you know, those fans are not watching. And yep, and it doesn't seem like WWE is working hard to get their vote, so to speak, and to get them to tune in. And you push Ciampa and Mustafa, you might get some people to go, all right, I'll put up with some of this other stuff because Ciampa is added to that list. I'm curious, Brendan, what the backstory is going to be for Ciampa going after Ali like this.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't get the sense for what they want out of Ciampa. I mean, it's sort of been, he had sort of like the soft debut and then he went back to NXT and then he had his final match there. And then they sort of solidified that he's part of the Raw roster and he was kind of doing the same thing like on and off, but he was a baby face and then he turns on Ali. So now he's a heel. It seems like they're still in a feeling out process with him in terms of both what they kind of want his character to be and where they want to slot him. So I think these matches with Mustafa will probably tell us quite a bit in terms of where they see both guys, because, you know, one's going to come out a winner, one's going to come out a loser. You know, I shouldn't even say that because 50-50 booking, they might both come out neither
the
thing.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. I think that you know, they could utilize both guys in bigger ways if they want to, but I think a lot of it will depend on what the crowd reaction is to this feud and how well or how much time they give them, you know, sort of on a weekly basis to tell the story and to work the matches.
All right, very good. Nick, I appreciate the topics.
Yep, that's it. Good night, guys, and have a great week.
Excellent. Thank you. Yep, you too.
You too.
All right, we'll go to William in San Diego next. William, often you have everything at your disposal. We've covered quite a few topics already. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Well, I don't think anyone took the segment that I was most excited about talking tonight.
Okay.
When I saw this, I jumped out of my chair. I did a backflip, and I just started celebrating because of the implications of it. But, you know, we saw backstage Nikki A.S.H. Kind of lamenting the fact that she lost the 24/7 title. Then Doudrop comes into frame, and she's like, okay, are you done playing? Do you want to get serious? And it's like, yes. Is this the end of the Nikki A.S.H. character. Are we finally going back to Nikki Cross? And I had kind of don't want to get my hopes too high, because WWE has a tendency of just teasing stuff and then dropping it the next week or forgetting about it or being like, we don't really want to go in that direction anymore. Even stuff that they end up building for weeks and weeks, like the tag team unification match, they end up dropping sometimes. So, you know, this could go in the direction that I'm hoping it's going, or it go nowhere. But at least for now, I am excited. I'm hoping that this is like the start of a what could be a fun tag team between Doudrop and Nikki as ASH. And it's almost like the writers read my mind as I was watching Raw, because I just remember watching that 24/7 match between Nikki and Dana Brooke and thinking, man, this woman used to be a Raw Women's Champion, and she just got pinned by Dana Brooke in like less than a minute or two. So I don't know. Am I being too hyperactive, too excited for this? You guys share my excitement?
Yeah. So I think you left off the possibility that Doudrop is proposing to Nikki, hey, do you want to get serious? Because I also want to. Is that the end of the Doudrop name too? Could Nikki and Doudrop both rebrand themselves
as part
of something?
You don't have to tell me on this.
Now,
I was already on board.
To tell you, I'm more worried that I'm getting, you know, people's hopes up.
Yeah.
But it's possible that Vince McMahon has been impressed by Doudrop and thinks the name is going to hold her back. And Nikki is a respected, talented worker. They did what they could with, you know, her version of Stardust, and now they're going to, you know, rebrand them and give them a more serious framing like Cody. Brandon, what do you think?
So that would be my hope. I think that's best case scenario, but I also just want to tamper expectations a little bit here. Even if they are being reframed as a serious duo and tag team, they are still limited by what WWE views the women's tag team division as, which is very little. You can see that Sasha Banks and Naomi, despite, you know, Banks being a huge star for the company and Naomi, you know, being a prevalent force in the women's division herself, they are on TV, but they are very much an afterthought. They are not a focal point of any major angle or storyline at all. So I would not think that Doudrop and Nikki A.S.H., or rebranded as Nikki Cross, would receive any better treatment than that. So that is a little something there to tamper expectations. However, I think that I'm willing to live with that reality if it means getting rid of the name Doudrop and also seeing the end of the A.S.H. character, which I'm not as down on, I think, as a lot of other people, mostly because it was her idea. I think that if WWE had saddled her with that gimmick and it was something that she was sort of upset with and not wanting to play, then I would be a little bit more unforgiving of it. But this was her idea. It was something she wanted to try out. And I certainly think it has run its course, but I don't go too heavy-handed on it, because it was her thing and she took agency to make it happen, and that doesn't always, you know, that doesn't always happen in WWE. So I do think it's cool that she got her gimmick, you know, on TV.
All right, Todd William, back to you.
Yeah, all joking aside, and I was only kind of half joking, I am like kind of optimistic about this. I do agree that obviously the women's tag team titles have been pretty much an afterthought in WWE's booking for, I don't know, probably a couple of years now, but they have had their high spots here and there. You know, I can point to like the Kabuki Warriors, or that period where Sasha and Bayley were tag team champs. And I do think that it just takes like this one tag team that can, you know, maybe like spark Vince's imagination a little, or get him a little excited. And, you know, maybe I'm getting my hopes a little too high, but I do feel like maybe, you know, there could be something there with Nikki and and Doudrop, and it's too soon to tell. You know, they've only done like a 5-second backstage segment. So, you know, not a lot to see from that. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. I also think there's a, you know, the women's tag division is a perfect place to put top singles wrestlers to, like Sasha right now, to occupy them in something that doesn't burn them out in singles matches. And that's what's going on with Orton and Riddle right now. And it, you know, it happened with Austin and Shawn Michaels. I mean, it's just, it's like a thing that's been done many, many times over the years. So I wouldn't say it's just a given that if Nikki and Doudrop are in the tag team, that's a burial. Obviously it's not an instant promotion, but if they drop their gimmicks and work as a tag team, I think there's still a way to have them then transition to singles in a way that makes them seem like a big deal. They can be protected in the tag division. But go ahead, William. Any other topics you want to bring up?
Yes. Wanted to talk about, I'm kind of surprised Kyle didn't bring this up, but, you know, we saw Liv Morgan pin Sonya Deville tonight and gonna score the win for her team. I don't know. Do you guys read anything into that? I think I've always kind of been on the camp that I think that there's a certain section of fans out there who maybe overestimate a little how much potential she has. You know, I do think that she has potential, but I don't think that it's it's been refined yet. I think she still has some work to do. I don't think that she's like at that, you know, ready to be Raw Women's Champion level yet, but
no.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you guys read anything her, like, yeah.
Yeah, Brandon, did Liv Morgan have a good week this week? I thought her promo backstage was good. Not like super memorable, but it was good. She got a win in a match with a lot of star power. I don't think she's ready to, you know, co-headline pay-per-views. We got a day one reference during her comeback, or, you know, one of her offensive moves tonight. I just think this is sort of a good place for her, and I think it's fine to have second-tier women who are valuable and do a good job, but they don't have to be over-pushed, but they also shouldn't just be forgotten about or thrown in the 24/7. To me, that's kind of where she fits, and there's no shame in that.
Yeah, that's where she fits and where she belongs for right now. I think that I haven't been super impressed with Liv's in-ring work or even her character work. I mean, it's fine. It doesn't stand out particularly strongly one way or the other. What has impressed me the most about Liv Morgan, and I think that continues to grow, is the natural connection that she's developed with the audience. I mean, the audience really likes her, and that's hard. That's hard to do. It's hard to establish a connection and feel like you have, you know, you're getting those good reactions and that people are excited to see you. And I always get the sense, whether the match she's in is important or not, that people are excited to see Liv. And so I think that is a really important aspect to her right now, and I think that they can utilize it. I think that is why she stayed in the spotlight when, you know, maybe her in-ring work hasn't been up to par or she's, you know, been hurt by the booking. I think that she stayed sort of, you know, in the mix because of the crowd's reactions to her. So I think she's in a good spot, and giving her a win tonight, you know, in a match that's not super consequential, but is the main event on Raw with Wade, like you said, a lot of star power, that says something. That says that they see something in her and that they feel she's worth at least investing the time in and a win like this in. So while I don't think that she's really ready to win the Raw Women's Championship by any means, I think that potential is there if her connection continues to grow with the audience, and we could eventually get to the point where the crowd demands it, which, you know, is that's the situation where I could see it making sense to get her in the title picture.
Yeah. Yep. All right, William, anything else?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about future challengers for Bianca, and it doesn't seem like, you know, Doudrop is going to be in that picture for the time being. Rhea is kind of feuding with Liv. And it seems like they're, you know, continuing their storyline of maybe moving Sonya back into a full-time competitor. But at the same time, they did the match last week where it just seems like, I don't know how you can do that match again and not, you know, and have people invested in it when she just so convincingly defeated Sonya, even with all those, you know, advantages, her changing the rules mid-match and everything of using her power. But at the same time, that was kind of, I don't know, I kind of got that sense a little tonight for whatever reason. And I don't know that there's, like, anyone else ready for her at the moment. I don't know. Do you think, guys think there's someone there for her? Maybe that's why they
Brandon, that question.
Win.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It felt, and I'd have to kind of review it, was a little convoluted, but is Sonya Deville's punishment for abusing her power that she gets an opportunity to re-earn a title match, and this time you better follow the rules because you won't have your power? Like, it just feels like a little bit the lesson was, well, if you can cheat and get away with it, great. If you cheat and don't get away with it, we'll just put you back to a good spot to try to win without cheating.
Yeah, it seemed kind of like her punishment was essentially like, you need to go wrestle a match and not use your GM powers to impact the results.
But you're in the mix.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a little convoluted. And I generally like Sonya getting back to the ring. I think she can be a valuable asset for that division. But I very much agree with William that you know, they sort of spent that match last week. She doesn't seem like a viable contender. She lost tonight. She got pinned clean by Liv Morgan. There's no real reason that she should have a title shot at this point, unless she again uses her power as GM to make it happen. And at that point, you know, what was the purpose of the punishment? I mean, so it's hard to kind of slot her in against Bianca, but I have a hard time thinking of who else there is right now. I mean, you have Becky paired off with Asuka. Liv Morgan is a babyface. I don't really think they're going to do a babyface feud there, and I'm not sure that that's a good matchup for either women. We've already mentioned Doudrop and Nikki A.S.H. or Nikki A.S.H. Looking like they're going to wind up in a tag team, so the options are really limited right now.
All right, cool. William, appreciate it. Any closing words for us?
No, I think that's all I had. Thank you guys for taking the call.
Absolutely. Good to hear from you again, as always. All right, well, go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland, and then hit some emails if nobody else chimes in here on the phone lines. Ryan, thanks for holding. What have you got for us this week?
My first question is on the pay-per-view coming up. I think it's going to be a heavy baby face as far as, like, the victories for them, because I just don't see Cody Rhodes losing yet. I see Drew, you know, getting a victory so they can make a case for him to get a title shot. I don't see, like, AJ losing two times in a row to Edge. And the only person I can see losing on the babyface side is Bobby Lashley, because I think Omos probably will get his victory back. So do you agree with that or not?
Yeah, I haven't looked at the lineup in that way yet, but you walking through it makes sense. Do they extend, I guess, what about Seth and Cody, Brandon, or even Corbin and Moss? Those could go different directions. And even Rousey, Charlotte, I think we're going to get some Drew Gulak involvement. So I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know that I can draw too many conclusions other than maybe the two out of the three that we cover here. What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, I think the six-man tag, I think you can go either way there. It seems more likely that the babyfaces win to set up Drew McIntyre as a challenger for Roman Reigns. So I'll go ahead with the babyfaces there. Ronda and Charlotte, I agree it's probably going to be some type of shenanigans. Very rarely do they get out of an I Quit match cleanly. So it's hard to commit either way there. Seth and Cody, again, really depends on whether or not they plan to continue that feud. If they're going three matches, I assume Seth gets his win back to create a rubber situation. But otherwise, it seems like Cody is going to come out on top of the feud. Omos probably gets his win back from Lashley. What else am I missing? Oh, Edge and Styles. I would say that Styles needs a win here, but with the stipulation added that Damian Priest is banned from ringside, my expectation is that someone new is going to be introduced into the group.
Any ideas who?
No, not off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But I would think they'd throw someone else in there, and that may cost AJ the match. So what else? What am I missing? Oh, Madcap Moss and Happy Corbin. Total toss up because they could just kick that can down the road and do
right.
it again.
Yep. All right, Ryan, back to you.
My second question is on Veer. You're talking about how he's unstoppable and you don't think anyone can beat him. So you think Cody's going to be the one that finally beats him?
Interesting. I've put a little bit of thought into the specifics, but certainly when you watch Veer, you wonder, okay, who's his first real feud going to be against? It really could be any number of people who spin off from the feud that they're in. Like if the aforementioned Madcap Moss beats Corbin and moves on, we could do Madcap against Veer and, you know, do a sort of a 50-50 feud with those two doing what WWE does. You know, Veer seems dominant. Madcap pulls out a surprise win with one big move, but he takes a beating. Veer beats him up. Madcap shows some seriousness, shows some fire, demands a rematch, gets it. I mean, just, you know, whatever, traditional heel face kind of style booking. They could spin off AJ Styles onto that. They could do Ali. I mean, honestly, it feels like the field is wide open for any babyface on Raw. What do you think, Brandon?
Yeah, I think that it's probably going to be a little bit too early for Veer to eat a loss from Cody if we go straight to something like that after the second Rollins match. I think they're going to want to keep Veer strong for a while. But yeah, I mean, if you take Cody out of the mix, you could do a lot of different stuff. If you move, like you said, if you move Madcap Moss or you move Veer, I think you can go that direction. You could put Ali in that spot and have him get a fluke win. It really is dependent on what their plans are for Veer. How high do they think his ceiling is? Because another guy you could slot in that position is Bobby Lashley. If you have the only issue with putting Lashley there is he's just coming off of a feud, presumably with Omos, and it's a similar situation where he's taking on a giant challenger. But that could work too. I think the upside for Veer is much higher overall than it is for Omos. But they've got a few options there. I think that they've got some different options to work with, and I think that Veer is a little bit easier to find opponents for than a guy like Omos too. I do kind of wish that they had gone with a less generic gimmick for Veer because I mean he really seems like sort of a well-read and interesting character, and I think that they just could have done more than sort of the yelling international heel, which is a gimmick that they've just overused, and it doesn't do the character any service, and it usually really, really limits them.
Oh yeah, I think this beer gimmick is very one-dimensional and one note. I don't think he's particularly believable in it because it seems like there's something else going on in his head besides
yeah.
He wants to, you know, bite the heads off raw fish like the early mid-80s Samoans often seek or were doing on promos. And this just feels like a dated throwback. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if I'd say it's like insulting, but it's just beneath. It's too simple and sort of beneath what I think perhaps the range Veer has. I don't look at him. He seems like somebody who, if you went to an indie show and he was like their star heel, when, like after the show at the bar, you could totally see him being a completely different person. You know, like just mm-hmm. you know, like I just imagine him sitting at the bar afterwards, having a drink and making people laugh, telling stories and talking politics and philosophy. Like I just don't buy that. Like, you know, and it doesn't help that he comes out already to tear someone apart. And then he dutifully waits 5 minutes in the ring for the commercial break and the recaps. You know, it's like, don't do that with him. You know, the first time they did that with him, they should have come back from the break and said, you know, Veer came out here and he got so impatient he beat up the ring announcer and tore up the ring and knocked over the ringside barricade. His match has been canceled, and like, you know, give us like some believability. Not that he's just dutifully standing on the X in the ring where he's supposed to stand for 5 minutes. So that's a whole other issue. But I want
speaking of that, Becky and Seth Rollins were in competition for who had to wait longer for their match, for their moment tonight. The setup, the pacing of Raw these days is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. All right. Go ahead, Ryan. What else for us?
And I've got a question on this Edge Sable Judgment Day. What do you think the odds are within like the next year we could see maybe a one-off with Gangrel, either as someone that runs interference for Edge or someone that feuds with Edge for one match? Since I know you did bring up the Brood, I think it was last week maybe on a promo.
Yeah. Brandon, you want to talk a little Edge? Yeah.
This is beneath the Brood to me, even. Yeah. I mean, Edge is one of my favorite wrestlers. I've said that on this show before, and I was really excited to see him come back. I've really enjoyed a lot of the work that he's done since coming back, and I just have zero interest in this character. I groan when he's on my TV. I think the promos are forced. They're overdramatic. They're fake. They're too affected. I think this is hurting Damian Priest when it was designed probably to help him and get him over. I don't think Edge is over as a heel. I think that the crowd is wanting him because they want it to go away. I want it to go away. It makes no sense. I mean, this guy turned on a dime. He became supernatural all of a sudden. Now he turns the lights off and there's lightning and he can appear backstage and in random interview segments with AJ Styles. He just talks in circles, says nothing. It's amazing to me that someone who is so smart to the business, who's been doing this for so long, who has done such successful character work over his career, is either thinking that this is good or is, I don't know. I don't know if this was Edge's idea and he's just all in on it and no one just has the guts to tell him like, hey, this is really bad. Or if this is WWE's doing, or a combination of the two. But, I mean, this is actively hurting Edge's legacy. I mean, it's just bad.
I agree. I propose that question. You know, is this enough to damage Edge's legacy? And the fact that that's a question we're even bringing up, even if the answer is no, probably not, we'll forget about it. Well, maybe, but my God, he was gone for a long time. He came back, and fans really liked him. And what, he was bored, or Vince McMahon was bored, or the writers were bored writing for, you know, the mountain bike salesman version of Edge? Well, this is not the solution to that, you know?
But even if they were bored, I mean, who cares? Because the crowd wasn't.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, the crowd was into Edge as he was. The crowd was into Edge when he was wrestling The Miz in a husband and wife tag team feud. If they can be into that, they can be into virtually anything that he does as that character. Edge is a legacy character who the fans yearned for years, and they weren't tired of seeing him yet.
That's
so
right. Yep.
Why take away that version of Edge and give them something that no one asked for that is the worst version of him in his 20-plus year career?
Uh-huh. Yep, well put. All right, thanks, Ryan. Appreciate the call.
So you don't think Gangrel's going to pop up anytime soon?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, sorry.
I don't.
I wouldn't rule it out because, as Ryan, you astutely bring up, he did mention that. It could be – I know some, that's like a fond era nostalgia for people. I don't know. I mean, it's so much has to do with the timing of, you know, what you've seen and where you were in your fandom or following wrestling. But I just don't look back at the Brood as like, ooh, that'd be something to bring back 2 decades later and, you know.
Well, yeah. I think it would present a challenge from a storyline perspective too, because this goes one of two ways. Either Gangrel shows up to fight Edge, mm-hmm. and if that's the case, Gangrel is nowhere near the star that Edge is. So it wouldn't work in that respect because, yeah, Gangrel is a legacy act and you can bring him back under the guise that this is the guy that sort of introduced Edge to the dark side. But their career trajectories are so significantly different that I don't think that that matchup works. So then if you flip it and you do the other side where Gangrel is showing up to, you know, sort of join Edge and join this stable with Damian Priest, then you run the risk of getting the crowd to sort of cheer the cool factor of seeing the Brood again. And that is the exact opposite of what Edge is going for.
Yep. Good point. So, Ryan, call back and gloat if it happens. but I think there's some peril in doing it, as Brandon points out.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing. All right, let's run out with a few semi-rapid emails here. JB from Detroit said, I know that the brand split has been rather undefined and nebulous for quite some time now, but I can't help feel that one very important act is fleeting dangerously close to the point of overexposure, and that group is the Bloodline. I was okay with the title unification for Roman at Mania, and I was okay with the idea that they take title unification at Backlash, but now it seems like that can is being kicked further down the road. I think the Bloodline regularly being on both shows can hand diminishing returns. I already had the feeling that the group may be losing some of its mystique and luster as a character direction. The group isn't evolving fast enough for my liking. As always, love the show, and everyone go VIP. Thank you, JB. There's this conundrum. You know, Roman Reigns is the Raw champion and the SmackDown champion, Universal and WWE, but he hasn't been on Raw. So you put him on Raw, and then it's like, oh, now they're being overexposed. This is one of the problems with unifying the titles is, you first of all, you talk about this a lot. The top stars at Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar level, they don't want to be working both Mondays and Fridays. So the floating champion is not really going to be on both shows, adding star power to both shows. But even if he and she were willing to, it leads to overexposure, which is one of the reasons Vince McMahon did the roster split in the first place. He had the luxury of both Rock and Austin and wanted one show for each of them, so he didn't have to, you know, worry about fitting them both onto a show, and then both shows would have a reason for fans to tune in. There are all kinds of reasons that I talked with him about at the time, you know, for doing it. But it is a problem, and that's why I hope they're not kicking the can down the road on the tag title unification. I hope Vince is suddenly realizing, like every wrestling promoter who ever starts a ranking system, going, the idea sounds good, but in execution, it never works, and I should have realized it going in. And so I'm hoping they're just kind of moving away from going even deeper into that for the reasons that JB brings up. Brandon, where are you on all this?
Yeah, it's really challenging, especially with Roman Reigns, because he doesn't wrestle on TV. So you're not even getting the split on a weekly basis, where with some, you know, double champions who would work both shows in the past, maybe they wrestle on Monday night and they talk on Friday night. Roman Reigns is talking on both nights if he's on the show. So that makes it super challenging, because then you run the risk of repeating promos which the fans are going to get tired of pretty quickly, or what they've been doing lately, which is kicking the can to Friday night on Monday night. So either way, you put yourself in a situation where it does very quickly lead to monotonous segments, and that in turn creates overexposure. So yeah, I think it's a problem, and I think that they're going to need to address it before too long. I am actually, lately anyway, I really enjoy the Bloodline act, and I definitely agree that they're, you know, too much of anything is too much. And I think that we are bordering on too much of the Bloodline right now. But for me, I have been a little bit more cognizant of the overexposure of Randy Orton and Riddle, because I think that they are a team whose comedy especially is best served in smaller doses. So limiting them to a couple segments on Raw works for me, whereas seeing them multiple times a night on both Raw and SmackDown is making them get very old very fast for me.
All right. Matt from South Carolina says, I just finished watching the opening sequence and I have four words for you. I hate the sword. It totally ruined what should have been a cool moment. Drew could have looked like a total badass, but instead that sword makes him look like a clown. Yeah, I mean, everyone wants a gimmick. Everyone gets a gimmick. You know, Mustafa Ali doesn't have one right now, and that's what I like about it. But yeah, it's, you know, what is Drew McIntyre if he doesn't have the sword and that distinctive music and all that? Well, I don't know. Maybe he can just be a lead babyface who doesn't seem bogged down by props and a gimmick and cosplay and WWE gimmicky stuff. I don't know if there's a lot to add, but I don't think it's ultimately helping him with a big part of the audience. I think there's a slice of the WWE audience who are like, oh, that's a guy with a sword. I like him. You know, and they exist. I just think you have to weigh that against people like Matt who are like, oh, God, I could like this guy, but he's holding that sword up again.
I mean, the thing is we've seen what Drew McIntyre can be without the sword, and that is a main event act that is really over. I mean, like, when McIntyre was winning the Royal Rumble and facing Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, he didn't have the sword. He was just genuine Drew who
yep.
loves wrestling
yep.
and had a great look and was great in the ring. There's no reason he can't be that again. If they are so married to the sword that they just refuse to get rid of it, at least what I would beg them to do is bring it back to what it was when they originally introduced it, which was he brings it out onto the stage. He slams it into that cut open area at the top of the stage, and he leaves it there. It doesn't come with him to the ring. He slams it into the stage. The pyro goes off. They get their big entrance moment, and then it stays there.
But it's still there.
Still,
you know?
It's not my
yeah.
first choice. I'm just
right.
saying,
no, I know what you mean. Yeah, I'm thinking
hell bent on keeping it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Zach in Texas says, do you think that would be backtracked on the title unification match because they realize that unifying the titles and further degrading the brand split would be a horrible idea? USA and Fox are paying a lot of money for stars being exclusive to the brand, but the more WWE unifies championships, the less exclusivity there is, and the less exclusivity is, the more the viewership could be depressed. Do you think the networks intervened and put the kibosh on the title unification belt, and that's why WWE pivoted to this pointless TV main event six-man for Sunday instead? Zach, I did throw that out there as a possibility, you know, that the networks intervened and said, you know, SmackDown drew under 2 million people last Friday. In viewership, I know they're going up against a lot of, you know, things, NBA games and now other, you know, NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball, things are back in full swing. So that's a part of it. But yeah, I mean, I think Vince is conservative in what he does, in part because if he does anything that coincides with a downward turn in ratings, that thing he did could be blamed. So if he just keeps doing what he's doing, he can blame it on other things out of his control. And unifying titles is something that is changing something that if then things take a turn for the worse, it could be blamed on his decision making. I think it's a possibility. Brent.
Yeah, it certainly is a possibility, though. I wonder if Fox or USA had a significant say in it, why weren't they speaking up, you know, at the world title unification?
Right.
It seems a little strange that they would suddenly be up in arms at unifying the tag titles, which for years have just meant absolutely nothing in the scheme of the company. But where they have been so heavily promoting it and making it the focal point, I think they could, you know, if Fox or USA isn't tuning into the show on a weekly basis and they just turn on the TV 2 weeks ago and they see that they're unifying the tag team titles and they're the main event focal point of the show every week. Now suddenly the tag titles mean something to them and now they no longer want them unified. So it's sort of could be WWE's own doing by making the tag titles seem important for once. It actually backfires on them. But I think it's certainly a possibility. It's also, you know, like we discussed at the start of the show, it could be any number of things. They could just want to push it down the road a little bit further for a bigger main event. They could have gotten cold feet and just decided that they didn't want to unify the titles, or they're just not ready to commit to one team or the other. I mean, both acts are hot. I think they like the idea of the Usos having the tag team titles alongside Roman Reigns. And I also think that they really think that, you know, Orton and Riddle are a strong anchor for Raw.
All right. Ed from High Desert, California. Good evening, Brandon and Wade. This will probably be more of a rant than anything else. So I turned off Raw once I saw that they were making the tag team unification match a six-man match. It just annoyed me to no end. Roman winning the biggest match ever has meant absolutely nothing since WrestleMania. What exactly has happened with him? With the titles? Has anyone on Raw shown any interest or concern for the titles? No, of course not. It's as if it never happened. Then to turn the show on today and hear them promote the tag match, adding Drew and Roman as if it's some sort of amazing thing, was terrible. I wasn't even crazy about the tag team unification, but at least the match had a reason to occur and is actually a big match. the six-man matches, what exactly? It's meaningless. At least if they started with a six-man tag match, which led to the Usos RK-Bro, that's different. But instead, we had weeks of the tag title unification hype, and it's wiped away in a few seconds. I completely get calling audibles. I get not every plan will be expected, but why invest or executed? But why invest time into this in any way? The biggest WrestleMania match has led to 4 weeks of what? Nothing. 3 weeks of tag team indication led to nothing. I don't expect it to be a bad match. There's some good talent involved, but it's so frustrating and annoying. Another point is Roman and Drew. Drew has been doing nothing for at least 6 months. Why couldn't they, with all the writers, have developed a plan where Drew has some feuds, where me as a fan would think, boy, I want to see him versus Roman. But instead, there's been months and months of Corbin and Moss. I get keeping that match for Money in the Bank, no issue, and no doubt the match itself would be good, but why can't they add any story to it? Is it really that hard? Thanks for all the hard work. Go VIP, everybody. The content is excellent. Thank you, Ed. I appreciate that. It is more of a rant than a question, but you know, I am looking forward, Brandon, to some story with Drew other than, you know, I've been sidelined with other things and now I want to, you know, go after something that's important to me. Do you think Drew ends up pulling one of the belts off Roman, but not both? Is there a way to tell that story, or do they save that for Cody?
Yeah, it's an interesting, sort of an interesting question. I do want to start by answering his question, which is, you know, he had poised at the end there, which is no, they just don't care. At the end of the day, they just don't care about the perception of Drew McIntyre being a viable challenger for Roman Reigns, because they think they can just put him in that slot and that instantly means that he's viable. I mean, the reason that we haven't gotten the feuds that he talks about, which, by the way, I completely agree and would have loved to have seen, is because they're only thinking about Roman Reigns. So when it's Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, Drew McIntyre means nothing to them, and he is cast to the side, and he's working the program with Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss for months. So then we get a situation like this, where they need to very quickly toss him into the main event and shoehorn them in there, however they can make it work, because they need more challengers. So yeah, I mean, I think that Drew could potentially take one of the titles, but I also, when I think about that and think that it's a possibility, then I immediately, I think kind of like you just did, go to Cody. And I think it's more likely that Cody gets the WWE title over on Raw and Reigns continues his run as Universal Champion on SmackDown, leading to whatever they have planned for WrestleMania next year. So I guess I would answer no. I guess I think that, you know, McIntyre will be a formidable challenger, but ultimately Reigns just continues rolling.
All right. Finally, a little bit different here. Hitton says, Wade and Brandon, casual WWE fan here who managed to catch a third of Raw tonight. As an Indian, I think Veer is a tired, racially ignorant gimmick from an era that disenfranchised marginalized communities. With that out of the way, I want to talk about his opponent today. What do you make of enhancement talent interviews, like we saw with Bert Hansen? WWE used to do this for Strowman's opponents in 2016, and I got a kick out of them. Is there a place for them in wrestling? I think they can help local talent build their brand for indie shows and also get heat on the squashing heel. Frankly, I'd like to see AEW utilize this. Your thoughts? I like getting to know briefly the jobbers and why they would take on this match and you know, give us a little stake in them, so when they lose, we have a little more empathy for what they just went through. Brandon?
Yeah, I like it. I thought it was well executed tonight. Complaints about, you know, the Veer gimmick aside, I thought it was a you know, positive segment overall, and I definitely like when they include a little bit for the enhancement talent, because there has been a time where WWE would utilize enhancement talent, and not only would they not go out of their way to tell you their name, but they would make sure that there was a point for the announcers to feign ignorance about them, which I don't think that ultimately helps the wrestler they're trying to get over either. I mean, if the person that they're facing is so unimportant that the commentary team can't even be bothered to say their name out loud, then what does it matter if they're being beat by the wrestler they're trying to get over? So I like it when they frame them. I mean, everyone knows that they're not going to win, and that's fine. It's at the end of the day, it's an enhancement match, but you're made to feel a little bit more invested by knowing who this person is and having a little bit of story behind them, and also giving something for the announcers to talk about while the match is going on.
All right, Brendan, is there anything else we did not cover today that you want to bring up from Raw?
24/7 stuff,
yeah.
Which
yeah.
not that there's much to say about it, but I just, whenever I watch those segments, I just have to constantly remind myself that, like, this is for someone. I'm not sure who. It yeah. might just be Vince McMahon. It might yeah. be 30 fans. It might be 30,000 fans. I don't know, but it's for someone, and that someone is not me.
I'll just talk about – I hope you have a prenup. I hope you have a prenup. It makes me just wonder, you know, is Vince McMahon having some issues these days where, you know, the prenup came into play or something? Like, oftentimes, I get
– My wife, you know, at the time?
I get suspicious, yeah, that there's – something, you know, something inspires on-air storylines that has to do with somebody, not necessarily Vince, could be somebody else, but all this talk of prenups, and you know, Reggie not knowing what it was, and then R-Truth, and Corey Graves with his comments about that. I don't know how, you know, Carmella feels. It's all in character, whatever, right? But,
On a slightly positive note, I do think Dana Brooke deserves a little bit better than this. I mean, like, She's good enough to be a lower card member of the women's division, not just relegated to this kind of stuff. And I also, you know, at this point in his career, R-Truth, there's probably nothing else for him on the roster, and I'm glad he still gets a paycheck. And that guy just seems like he's actually having a ton of fun with this, so, you know, more power to him, I guess.
She's kind of taken the turn like Bernadette did in Big Bang Theory, where it's like suddenly she's just this naggy, unlikable, screeching spouse who's just overreacting to everything. And I mean, obviously, you know, this is all just campy comedy and, you know, comedy with quotes, depending on, you know, to each their to interpret what qualifies as comedy. But, you know, it is farcical how quickly they went from they fell in love and got married, and now how quickly they're just, you know, at each other's throats and turning on each other and feeling betrayed and wanting a divorce and all that. I mean, it's so absurd. I just
Is that not a living, breathing metaphor for Vince and most of the characters on his TV shows, though? I mean, he introduces them, he falls in love with them, and then 2 weeks later, it's over.
Yes. Yes. No, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. Lot that could be said about what they're doing with 24/7. I think Dana Brooke, Brandon, is perfectly cast. This is the perfect spot for her, and in part because she is so delighted to be 24/7 champion. I believe she has it, you know, next to her bed, and then, you know, brings it to the kitchen with her. Probably brings it to the grocery store and takes photos with it. I just think it's a point of pride. I think the 24/7 title, thanks to Dana Brooke, means more than any championship in AEW, all 47 of them. That's one of the fun things about this
She strikes me as like the type of person who, you know, probably didn't watch a lot of wrestling growing up. So she understands the importance of championships. So, but she doesn't quite grasp that there are different levels of importance to said championships. So the fact that she has one is just like the greatest thing in the world. So I like to defend Dana Brooke because I remember way back in NXT when she had what was a very interesting match with Asuka when Asuka debuted. Dana Brooke was doing some cool stuff in those early days of Black and Gold NXT, and it's just been all downhill from there.
Yeah. All right, Brandon, we will hear from you in written form on Sunday night.
Yeah, I will be covering WrestleMania Backlash for The Torch on Sunday evening. I won't be attending in person, so I will be covering the show live.
Yeah.
So you can follow along on pwtorch.com. I'll have my detailed thoughts and analysis. And then not too long after that, I'll be back for AEW Double or Nothing.
Oh, cool. Yes. Brandon, how can people follow you on social media?
Yeah, you can follow me at BLeClaire12 on social media, on Twitter specifically. I've been a little quiet, more quiet than usual lately, because like I mentioned at the top of the show, I just bought a house.
Congrats.
So things are, thank you, things are very, very crazy and hectic and chaotic. For trying to fit wrestling in has been a little bit more challenging than usual, but I'm excited to be in and have a nice big cozy living room, and I'm going to have a dedicated office. I have a dedicated office now, but I'm going to have more room. So looking forward to doing more torch work there and getting settled in. But in the meantime, things are crazy. We're about 29, 30 days out from closing. So This is where all the crazy stuff happens. Like inspection went well, appraisal went well. Everything's good. Now it's just a waiting game where we have to buy a bunch of stuff and find somewhere to put it.
Yes. And wait for delivery. Oh, the coordination of all the delivery things that you're doing, all that is it's fun. Enjoy it. But yeah, it's disruptive.
I can tell you the worst part right now, and you know, if anybody's thinking of doing it this summer or anytime soon, you know, maybe get your quotes now. Heat pumps, quotes for heat pumps right now, terrible. It's an awful, awful time.
There you go. House buying tip from Brandon.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Brandon. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks to everybody who emailed and called, and we will talk to y'all next time.